a few years ago, Susan and I were at Harris Teeter. We went in after work one day. We were shopping for groceries. It was a really delightful day. We ran into somebody in the store, and we had probably a 10-minute conversation. It was a good time. We didn't have the kids with us. It was really good, right? We were in the grocery store. And we come out, and we go to get in the car, and Susan said, I don't see my backpack. And I said, well, maybe you took it into the store. We weren't thinking about it. So we walk back into Harris Teeter. We're walking around the grocery store, and we go up to the front, and we ask them if anybody had turned in a backpack, and they said, no, we don't have anything. And it was at that moment when we both looked at each other, and we realized that our car had been broken into. Someone had stolen her backpack. Now, you may say, that's not a big deal. It's just a backpack. Inside of her backpack was her computer, was her wallet with her ID and every credit card we have together, including our bank card. It was this moment where I looked at my wife, and she had this incredible feeling of being violated. This huge feeling of somebody has all of my stuff. Now, I am a person, I'm a big T on the Myers-Briggs, which means I go into like, how do we fix this, right? How do we solve this? So I get in the car and I start calling credit card companies. I cancel all of our credit cards immediately, right? I end them all. We take care of that. And I say, all right, let's get the emergency number, non-emergency number for the police, and we call the police department. We go home and Susan is visibly upset. She said, Tim, they've got everything. They've got all my personal information. They've got all my stuff. So finally we sit down and we're like, all right, let's eat some dinner while we wait for an officer to come over. An officer gets over relatively quickly. The kids are sitting in the dining room at the table, and they're very confused as to why a police officer is in our house. It can really work well as a parent if you want your kids to behave. But we sat down with the officer, and the officer was a really kind guy. And he walked through and he asked all these questions, what was taken, and she told him everything that was taken, and she listed it out. And the police officer gets to the end and he goes, I think we're done. He goes, oh, one more thing. And he looks at Susan and he says, can I see your ID? For those of you that don't get it, her ID was stolen. She told him right away it was taken. And she had this well of emotion coming up because he brought up the thing that she was the saddest that she lost, her identification. And she said, she looked at me, he was sitting right there, and she goes, how did he miss that? How did he miss this important point? And I think what I want to say this morning is I think we spend a lot of our lives missing important points. I think we miss a lot of our lives missing important pieces of the puzzle. That guy sat there with us, Susan in tears, told him the story of what was taken, and then he just sat there and said, hey, and I need your ID. He missed the piece of the puzzle. I actually think we often miss pieces of the puzzle. And when it comes to God, I think we miss a really big piece of the puzzle that I want to talk about this morning. In our last sermon series, I was talking about God and I was talking about the nature of God, and we touched for just 1 week on something I want to spend a few weeks on. We talked about God within us. We talked about the person of the Holy Spirit. The person of God that many of us miss. Many of us are uncomfortable with, many of us sort of walk away from. Many of us are comfortable with Jesus, not all of us, but many of us are because there was this tangible person in Jesus. We're comfortable with God because many of us relate to God sort of as a father, maybe as a mother, but we relate to God, but this Holy Spirit thing feels weird to a lot of us. And I think, friends, the reason that we miss the mark is because we miss the Holy Spirit, we miss that person of God within us. So over the next 3 weeks, I'm going to be doing a sermon series on the Holy Spirit. The next 3 weeks, we're going to dive deeper and deeper into something we're calling Not Alone. Not Alone. We're going to talk about God within us, how we can experience the Holy Spirit, how we can engage the Holy Spirit, how does the Holy Spirit enter our lives, and how do we become more comfortable with God within us. This week, we're kicking off specifically with Not Alone in a Crowd. Now, I wonder if you've experienced this phenomenon before. I wonder if you've ever been, for example, sitting somewhere, maybe in a park or something, and you look around and there's all these people around, but you feel completely alone. You ever experienced that? Maybe you've gone into a city, a place that you've never been before, and you're there, and you look around and you say, all of these people, but I have no clue where to go and what to do, and I don't have anybody that I can connect with. Maybe you just live in Northern Virginia. And maybe you look around and you see people everywhere you go, but you feel incredibly alone. Perhaps you are in a church or you have been part of a church before where you look around and you see lots of people, but even seeing lots of people, you feel completely alone. I think it is incredibly easy for us to be out in the world, and it doesn't matter how many people are around, and we can be incredibly lonely. Would you agree? I think it's easy for us to look around and experience that. So we're going to talk if there's a possibility that the Holy Spirit can fill that void. Is there a possibility that God within us can fill that void of loneliness? I'm going to take you to one of the first crowds that I know about this morning. I'm going to take you to a crowd where the Holy Spirit shows up. I talked about it a little bit recently. We spent the first Sunday of Easter where we talked about the resurrection of Jesus and how the disciples still didn't get it. We talked about that last week, right? The disciples see Jesus again and they're like, oh yeah, you are still here. And this week I'm going to jump to 40 days later. I'm going to jump to a time where the church celebrates this thing called Pentecost, and we're not celebrating that this morning, but I'm going to talk about this idea of being in a crowd and something big happening, this idea of being in a crowd and the Holy Spirit showing up and doing something. So the people are used to experiencing Jesus. They haven't been alone because Jesus has been with them, and then all of a sudden, Jesus is resurrected, he ascends, and then 10 days later, they're going, what now? Where is Jesus? Tomorrow comes, he doesn't return. They're used to experiencing him. The day happens, nothing returns. The next day, no return. 10 days later, we get to the birth of the church. I call it the first big church meeting, right? The people came together. It's the celebration of the beginning of the church. It's not the time when the first building was built, by the way. It's the time when the idea of the church is actually born. The Holy Spirit falls upon a group of people who are trying to figure out, how do we do this without Jesus in our midst? What now? What do we do? And they're having this meeting and they're having conversation. I want to take you back a little bit. I call it a meeting because the first thing that they do in the book of Acts is they try to decide who's going to replace Judas. Right? They've had this team of 12. Judas is gone. He's no longer alive. What do we do? So they have a vote. They pick two. They do it the good church way, right? They pick two people, and they get it down to one. And they decide Matthias is the guy. He's going to be the new 12th disciple. And then I bet they all looked around and said, now what will we do with him? What do we do with a new guy? Because we don't know what we're supposed to do anymore. They forgot that Jesus told them. But what do we do with a new person coming in who's going to be one of the 12 because Jesus is still not here? And I thought about it when I was reading the text this week, and I said, I wonder how lonely they were in that room. They had each other, but none of them knew the answer. None of them knew exactly what was going to happen next. None of them knew exactly what they were supposed to do. So while they were in a crowd, they were in a group, they were even in a team, people who had journeyed through life with them, I bet they felt incredibly alone. I think it's easy for us, friends, to be in the midst of a big group of people and feel like no one understands us. I think it's easy for us to look around and assume that no one else is having the experience that we're having, and therefore we feel completely alone. And I feel like that's what they were experiencing in that moment. We don't know what's going to happen. Nobody else got to walk with Jesus the way we got to walk with Jesus. And we don't absolutely understand. We gave our life to this guy. Could it have been for naught? What are we going to do? And then all of a sudden, and I feel like this is the way God often works, all of a sudden, in a moment, this gust of wind busts through the windows, busts through the doors, and starts violently, is the word that's used, blowing in the room. Can you imagine? I mean, you're half asleep, it's a meeting, and all of a sudden, that happens, all of a sudden, a gust of wind comes in and it starts messing up everybody's hair, right? And people get completely stopped in their tracks. Absolutely stopped. And then if that's not weird enough, fire starts coming above their heads, right? And if that's not weird enough, they start speaking languages that people who don't speak their language can understand. all of this is happening at once. I can imagine the room was not silent like most of our churches are on Sunday morning. People were in chaos and excitement, and the Holy Spirit was blowing up the space, moving through the room, and perhaps none of them knew exactly what was happening, and it was so exciting. Finally, something since they last saw Jesus. Finally, something big is moving. God has violently returned, but not in the way that they thought God would in the person of Jesus, but it is the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit has come. And people from the outside start asking questions. This is what happens when God moves, right? When God moves in a community and God starts doing things, people on the outside start going, what's wrong with those people? Why are they so excited? Why are they moving? Why are they shaking? Why are they doing these things? In fact, the question that comes up from the people on the outside is, are they drunk? Y'all, people should be asking the church if they're drunk, if big things are happening. People should be saying, it looks so different. And that's what the people are saying. Are they drunk? What's going on? And Peter, the disciple who I love to give a hard time, does exactly what he should do in this moment. He says, all right, everybody, gather. I'm going to explain what I think's going on. And this is what he says in Acts chapter 2. Peter stood up with the 11, raised his voice, and addressed the crowd. Fellow Jews and all of you who live in Jerusalem, let me explain this to you. Listen carefully to what I say. These people are not drunk, as you suppose. It's only 9 in the morning. I think that's a really funny point. It's only 9 in the morning. No, this is what was spoken by the prophet Joel. In the last days, God says, I will pour out my spirit on all people. Your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your young men will see visions. Your old men will dream dreams. Even on my servants, both men and women, I will pour out my spirit in those days, and they will prophesy. I will show wonders in the heavens above and signs on the earth below, blood and fire and billows of smoke. The sun will be turned to darkness and the moon to blood before the coming of the great and glorious day of the Lord, and everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. Peter does what any good teacher should do. He doesn't try to make it up on his own. What does he do? He goes back to somebody else. He goes back and takes the story of a prophet who has come before. Someone who came, a prophet is somebody who comes to speak truth in a challenging time, in a time when people need to hear it. And he says, listen to the words of Joel. He told us this would happen. None of us believed it. It would have been interesting had he said, let's remember the words of Jesus that he gave us just a few days ago about the advocate coming. But instead he says, listen to the words of Joel. Perhaps it was his way of connecting with them in a story many of them would have known. But he says, listen to the words of Joel. The Spirit is coming and it's going to transform everything. The people who have stopped dreaming are going to start dreaming again because of the Holy Spirit. The people who have given up on what God can do will stop giving up because the Spirit will move through them and begin to transform their lives, begin to transform the community, and they will start going out and prophesying. Often, I think when people think about the word prophesying, they're really scared by it. What he's saying is, my servants too will be able to go out and tell you the truth, the good news. They'll come out and spread the word. I don't look at this speech as Peter rebuking the people. It seems to me like it's Peter's aha moment. It's like he's standing there in the middle of that crowd, and he gets up and he says, I got it. The Holy Spirit's going to do something, and it's going to be big. And our lives are going to be changed because of it. It's as if Peter understood that he could study all day, that he could walk with Jesus all day, but until he fully experienced the Spirit of God, he was going to miss it. Peter knew all the deal. He'd studied. He'd walked with Jesus for 3 years. He knew the rules. He knew the stuff he was supposed to know. But it wasn't until he experienced the wind the fire, the movement of the Spirit. I was thinking about it this week. Imagine that you're a person who wanted to go sailing, right? We have some spaces to go sailing around here. And imagine you were a person who wanted to go sailing, and you did what any person who was going to do something well did. You went out and you bought some sailing books. Maybe you went on the internet, although I don't advise Wikipedia, but you went on the internet and you said, how am I going to learn to sail? And you read every single book that you could read, every good book on sailing. You even went to a master sailor and you said, teach me how to sail. And they gave you everything that you needed to get. And you take your sailboat out, you launch it in the lake, you get out there, and you sit there because there's no wind. You can know every single thing that you need to know, but until you experience the movement of the wind, you're not going anywhere. A sailor who goes out and thinks, if I just put up the sails, but I don't look at the conditions, doesn't know how to sail. When the Holy Spirit moves into us, it is a movement of the wind. I wonder if you're a person who feels like this in life. I often have conversations with people, and they'll say something like, well, I'm kind of religious, right? I go to church sometimes. I read the Bible sometimes. Maybe you're in a life group and you've been doing all of the things and you've been walking all the steps, but at the end of the day you go, I still don't feel God. Tim, I have checked every box you've told me to check. I have done every single thing that you've said to do and still no movement. Maybe you feel like you're sitting in a boat in the sun and nothing is happening. I want to say to you, I think the missing piece of the puzzle is the Holy Spirit. Because when we experience it and the wind blows, things happen. When the wind blew for those disciples, those people in the early church, it lit up their lives. I think the problem today is not that the Holy Spirit has stopped blowing. You know what I think the problem is? I think we've stopped expecting it to blow. I think we've stopped expecting the Holy Spirit to do something. And when it does, we write it off as a fluke, or isn't that luck, or isn't that something great that just happened? All the stars aligned and all was good. What happened when the Holy Spirit hit the early church can happen for us as well. It can move through and do something powerful. The Holy Spirit does incredible things, and I think there are a couple of quick things I want to give you from this passage this morning. First, the Holy Spirit moves us. It calls us to get up off of our butts and experience God. The Holy Spirit calls us to move. The Holy Spirit moves us from a place of loneliness to a place of connectedness with God. We can sit in the middle of a crowd where no one else is that we know, and we can experience that connection because of the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit calls us to something as a community as well. It's not just an individual thing. It doesn't just move us out of our loneliness, but it calls us to address the loneliness of the world. What does the book of Joel quoted by Peter say? The young and the old men and women will prophesy. What are they prophesying? The message of God, a message of love, a message of hope to the world. I love this. The people who stop dreaming will start dreaming again because there's a message of hope that the world needs. And that's what happens when the Holy Spirit fills us and we allow God to come into our lives. How do we experience the Holy Spirit? We're going to talk about that more in the next couple of weeks. But the first thing I would tell you is we ask for it. We sit and we ask for the Holy Spirit to move. We invite the wind to blow. I think so much of us experiencing the Holy Spirit is about our posture. It's about us being receptive, to be still and quiet enough to experience it. The early disciples waited. They sat in that room, and maybe we have to wait a little more patiently than they did, but we wait for it. Recently, I was having a conversation with a friend, and my friend was telling me about all these wonderful things that were happening in his life. And he said, Tim, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened. And I, being the great pastor that I am, said, well, isn't that wonderful that all those things just lined up? It's good, right? And he said, Actually, I think it's the Holy Spirit. Actually, I think the Holy Spirit is doing something in my life to align these moments for me, and now it's my job to respond to it. How do we respond? We're going to talk about that in the next couple of weeks. This first week, I wanted you simply to be able to let the Holy Spirit in. Let the Holy Spirit do what it does. For most of us, the Holy Spirit's a foreign concept, but it doesn't mean that we should reject it. The Holy Spirit was a foreign concept to the early church. Remember, they had walked with Jesus, but when the wind blew, they let it blow.